This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, July 23rd. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll take a look at what last week's ruling against DACA means for immigrant students in Colorado. Then we'll hear about a bike ride to support treatments for post-traumatic stress that's taking place this weekend. And we'll also look at bike safety in Boulder County with Cyclists for Community. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Today, Duncan Campbell will speak with Mark Barasach on the Regenerative Society. Then at 9:30 is the Morning Sound Alternative, an eclectic mix of music until noon. But first, these news headlines with Stacey Johnson.
Denver City officials on Thursday closed access to Sloan's Lake due to an increase in blue-green algae. The Denver Post reports the park remains open, but the rise in toxic algae in the lake has led to a ban for anyone contacting the water. Park officials first discovered the blue-green algae in the lake earlier in the month, but now have replaced warning signs with closure signs due to the rise in toxic levels. According to Denver Parks and Recreation staff, the algae occurs every year, but the sustained heat has caused higher than normal levels. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland will visit Grand Junction today as the department reviews the future of the Bureau of Land Management headquarters. Steve Miller has more.
U.S. Senators John Hickenlooper and Michael Bennett invited Haaland to visit Grand Junction to hear from the community firsthand. Hickenlooper and Bennett feel that with the climate change fueling severe drought and catastrophic fires, restoring a strong public lands agency and fixing the previous administration's mistakes is a top priority. According to a January 28, 2021 Washington Post article, the Trump administration decided to relocate most of the BLM headquarters staffers out west to Grand Junction. 87%, or a total of 287 BLM employees, either resigned or retired rather than move. The exit of longtime career staffers from the agency, responsible for managing more than 10% of the nation's land, showed the extent to which the Trump administration reshaped the federal government. The idea of the move led states and cities across the West to believe that hundreds of employees would move to a single city, improving BLM's customer service and public land management. Besides meeting with the Grand Junction community, Haaland's trip will also include meetings on several other Colorado priorities, including drought and wildfire mitigation, maintaining resilient rural economics, and passing CORE, the Colorado Outdoor Recreation and Economy Act. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
New research from the University of Colorado Boulder and Colorado fire officials suggests that mountain residents overestimate how prepared they are for wildfires, along with underestimating their risk. According to the Daily Camera, fire officials assessed homes in the Berlin Ranchette subdivision near Bailey for wildfire risk factors, which included vegetation, topography, and building materials. Research Associate Professor Hannah Breckard-Smith and her team then sent over 1,000 surveys asking residents to assess their homes with the same wildfire risk factors used by fire officials, while also asking residents about their experience with wildfire, risk reduction, evacuation plans, and their sources of information. More than 400 households responded, showing residents thought they were more prepared than they were and that their own risk assessment was lower in comparison to the assessment done by firefighters. On Thursday, Boulder's Planning Board conducted the first of two public hearings on the draft annexation agreement of CU South, a site owned by the University of Colorado Boulder. The draft annexation agreement will guide development and flood mitigation work on the site. The Daily Camera reports the Planning Board will return on July 29th for deliberation and then will provide a recommendation to City Council, which is expected to make a decision in September. Tax experts are making the case that now is the first time to shift the nation's tax code to finance investments in working families. Eric Goulatas has more.
As Congress struggles to pass legislation to boost recovery from the pandemic's economic fallout, tax experts are urging lawmakers to invest in policies that benefit working families by taxing the rich. Chuck Marr with the Center on Budget Policy Priorities says expanding access to affordable housing, quality child care, and other supports can help families re-enter and remain in the workforce and begin to close a widening racial wealth gap. He points to recent reports showing that the nation's wealthiest households and corporations pay little or no income tax, the nation's primary tax revenue stream.
And the idea here is to raise taxes on the wealthiest people in the country and to use that revenue to improve the economic opportunities and stability of working middle-class families.
Coloradans now seeing hundreds of dollars each month deposited in their bank accounts through the temporary child tax credit, a policy projected to dramatically reduce child poverty, would continue to receive those benefits under proposals making their way through Congress. Democrats are also pushing to expand access to health care and giving all workers access to paid family leave. Critics warn that expanding safety net programs will usher in an age of big government, and some lawmakers say raising taxes would slow economic recovery. I'm Eric Galatis.
For today's weather, there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms between noon and 1 p.m. Then after 1 p.m., showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Temperature is currently 72 degrees here at the Boulder Studios. For KGNU, this is Stacey Johnson.
A week ago today, a federal judge in Brownsville, Texas, dealt a major blow to new applicants for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. For more on what the ruling means for DACA applicants in Colorado, KGN News' Rosanna Longobetter spoke with immigration attorney Violeta Chapin of CU Boulder's Criminal and Immigration Defense Clinic.
Please tell us what's going on right now with DACA.
Thank you, Rosanna. I'm happy to be here at KGNU. So this past Friday, a district court judge in Texas issued a decision in a lawsuit that was actually filed a while ago. It was filed in 2018 by the state of Texas, and several other states joined in, not Colorado, I'm happy to say. So the Texas lawsuit challenged the legality of DACA. And Judge Hannon ruled on Friday that he believes DACA is unlawful for two reasons. First, President Obama did not comply with the Administrative Procedure Act when he created the program in 2012, is the first reason that Judge Hannon gave. And the second reason Judge Hannon gave that he believes DACA is unlawful is that President Obama also exceeded his executive authority as president when he created the DACA program in 2012, because the DACA program confers affirmative benefits on people who are undocumented and gives them a work permit and protects them from removal. And in Judge Hannon's opinion, the president does not have the authority to do that. I actually think Judge Hannon is wrong there. I think he's probably right on the first argument about the Administrative Procedure Act, but that can easily be complied with. The second question is the harder question about whether President Obama exceeded his authority. I think Judge Hannon is wrong, but I don't get to decide. And the case will next go to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, where it's a pretty conservative court. People are fairly certain that his decision will be affirmed. And then the question is whether or not the Supreme Court will take it up. And then it's anybody's guess what happens there.
There's a lot of fear from the DACA community. Are they all affected or only the ones that are starting the process?
So what the ruling did was stop the Department of Homeland Security from processing new DACA applications that have either already been sent or that will be sent in the future. So any new applicant for DACA, their process is halted. This decision does not affect renewals. So people who already have DACA and are eligible to renew their benefits should continue to renew. And as you said, we help people do that all the time in the clinic, and we do that for free. And so they should get in touch with me if they are interested in renewing their DACA. And it is important to renew their DACA. In terms of the fear, I totally understand. I want people to understand that the decision does not command the Department of Homeland Security to go arrest and deport DACA recipients. Nobody expects that to happen. I think that what's worse about the decision is that young people and their families are constantly being whipsawed back and forth by judges who stop or start the program, and there's never any stability, right? And so that's very anxiety inducing when you don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next. And unfortunately, your life is in the hands of either judges or congresspeople that fail to pass legislation.
Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition condemns the federal judge's decision to partially end DACA and calls on Congress to create a pathway to citizenship this year. How is this new ruling going to affect the pathway to citizenship from all those immigrants that do not have documentation here in the United States?
So after the decision, President Biden immediately condemned it as well and promised to appeal, right? And that'll go the legal process. The other thing President Biden said was that he hopes that Congress is able to pass a budget reconciliation bill that now features the Dream and Promise Act, or that piece of legislation that would affect DACA recipients, farm workers, and TPS holders. I'm hopeful about that. The budget reconciliation process requires less votes than the other sort of normal ways that bills progress through Congress. But there's still some hurdles there. There has to be an argument that is accepted that the Dream and Promise Act relates in some way to the budget, which I believe it does, because all of the immigration sort of pathways to naturalization or to residency require fees. And so pretty substantial fees. And so people would have to pay them. And obviously that would, there'd be hundreds of thousands of people applying for them, and it would be a big boost to the budget. And so I think I'm hopeful that that hurdle is easily jumped. And then it, but then it needs to get the votes, even from fairly moderate Democrats.
How many people will be affected?
Nationwide, we have about 11 million undocumented people living in the United States at any time. And that's been the case for well over a decade. Here in Colorado, it's estimated that there are about 17,000 people that have DACA, that currently have DACA. I think you're going to see some of those numbers drop off. And we've seen some of those numbers drop off, sometimes because people just get disaffected by the process. They don't think it's fair, or they get afraid, right, too, that, oh, I don't know about continuing to interact with the United States government. USCIS, when they made this announcement, or we've been hearing the numbers out of USCIS, that there's about 50,000 pending new DACA applications nationwide. I don't know how many of those are here in Colorado. We certainly in our clinic helped many people apply for new DACA benefits over the last few months. Unfortunately, those applications are going to be stopped. This situation with DACA is very specific, and the temporary protected status issue is also very specific to those people who have it. But you're right that it affects way more people than just them. And it affects their families. It affects their parents. It affects their communities. And I think the immigrant community right now is sort of rightfully exhausted by all of this and by the back and forth with all of these programs and by the failure of Congress to act. I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to pass new legislation that will affect at least DACA recipients and TPS. But, you know, Senator Bob Menendez out of New Jersey, he introduced the much larger and more aggressive immigration reform bill that would affect all 11 million people living undocumented in America. And it's my great hope that that will one day pass, but that one's going to be very difficult to get through Congress because of Republican opposition.
What's at stake if this continues?
When you say this, do you mean the uncertainty?
Yes.
It's deeply shameful for us as a country to fail to resolve this immigration issue for so long, because I think on both sides of the aisle, everyone agrees that our immigration system is broken. Where we disagree is in the solutions to fixing it. And so this proposal that is pending, the large, large piece of legislation that Congressman Menendez proposed, is, I think, a common sense solution that would finally normalize the status of millions of people living in the United States. And we have precedent for this, right? In 1986, President Ronald Reagan, the lion of the Republican Party, through the Immigration Reform and Control Act, legalized the status of about 3 million undocumented people living in the United States. And I think that has only benefited our economy. We've learned during COVID that millions of immigrants, regardless of their status, are essential frontline workers. And they saved our economy in many ways during the pandemic. We can't survive without our immigrant communities, immigrant labor, immigrant families, immigrant dollars, quite frankly. And so I think what's at stake is is sort of the health of our nation if we can't resolve this in some way or another.
Thank you so much. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobete.
Health experts warn that a mental health emergency is on the heels of the pandemic that has yet to recede. A local proponent of a non-invasive treatment known as tapping is organizing a 22-mile bike-a-thon ride from Gun Barrel Sunday. Tapping combines principles of psychotherapy with acupressure. I spoke with ride organizer Stanley Steamer Le Carpentier. Stanley, describe the type of treatment you perform and why.
Well, for years now, people that have PTSD, especially veterans, I've been going out and finding them and help to bring them all the way home and develop what we call PTSD removal. You know, it's all based on a science called tapping. And this is not some frou-frou, you know, psycho mumbo jumbo. This is real stuff, studied at University of Florida for 12 years and declared a science. So if we have, you know, lots of PTSD in our society, from firefighters to veterans, you know, from housewives to homeless people, and we have the ability to fix it, it is ridiculous that we are not. It is ridiculous that we are spending all of our effort spinning our wheels when we could just simply solve this problem.
So go back and explain what you mean by the term tapping.
So tapping is when you're hitting meridian points on your body while doing certain psychological discharge statements. You know, whether you're religious or not, this reference will help. In the Bible, Jesus talked about the burden of our sins, right? So what we're talking about is stuck energy. It's literal weight. And so when you dissipate that energy by clearing those meridian points and letting that energy come off of you and dissipate off of you, the problem is gone as well. The script is gone. The firefight in the head goes away, or it loses its color, its emotion, and it no longer controls the person.
Now, you're organizing an event this July 25th. Explain what it's about and how people can find out more.
So I've been doing this a long time, a lot of it anonymous, a lot of it at my own expense. And for this problem to really be solved, I need everybody's help and support. So we've started a thing, www.ptsd.fund. And we're using that to do what we call trek-a-thons, because it's like the old walk-a-thon, but you can, I don't care if you drive a golf cart, you know, or a car, you know, I'm taking it. I use a hand cranked three-wheel trike because I had lost my mobility last year. And part of this is creating these mobility things. But what we're doing is we go 22 miles because there's 22 veteran suicides a day. And we want people to pledge $1 a mile, right? Or go 22 miles with us. That's why we say go 22, okay? And then bring in more sponsors. We're going to use this money, you know, to start the 501c, and then we're going to attack PTSD across the country, starting with veterans, having a lot of one-on-ones for free, big group things, but also going out and having presentations for firefighters, for medics, for first responders, for cops, for any group. You know, I will go anywhere at any time to anybody to do tapping. I've said that for years, and I mean it, because you can do 3 minutes of tapping, or you can do 30 years of yappy therapy for essentially the same result. We don't have a theory, okay? We have a science. This isn't a question. I have watched hundreds of PTSD soldiers over the years use tapping to get rid of PTSD. I have never seen it fail to get rid of PTSD in a veteran who did the work. And veterans do the work. Learn tapping for yourself. Go through your own inventory of traumas, phobias, pains, okay? You know, go through them and tap them out. Be free. Get rid of that energy that's holding you down, because that's, you know, a lot of depression. That's why they call it depressing, right? It is the weight of this energy that is stuck.
And that ride is 22 miles. It's happening on the 25th, and it starts at 8 a.m. leaving from where?
We'll be in the Gun Barrel area, and we'll be heading down through the trails of Boulder, going over to Fine Park at the end.
Okay. Stanley Steamer Le Carpentier, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for the attention on this.
Last week, a vehicle struck and killed a cyclist by the name of Alejandro Acosta on Boulder County's Lee Hill Road. The crash took place in a stretch of that road that had been previously identified by Boulder County cyclists as unsafe. For more on the state of cycling safety in Boulder County, I spoke with Matt Muir, member of the advocacy organization Cyclists for Community. What do we know about this particular case and the road conditions there?
So we were talking earlier, and the Colorado State Patrol will come in cooperation with the Boulder County Sheriff's Department, and they'll do an investigation that may take up to a year, and it'll probably be close to 100 pages. They're both reliable partners, and the view of C4C, they'll do a really good job. In terms of existing or pre-existing hazardous conditions, we're lucky to live in Boulder County because what they've been doing for years is they've been updating, and years ago they created a Boulder County Transportation Master Plan. And that is a plan with multiple layers, several of which have to do specifically with bicycling in Boulder County. When you combine the popularity of bicycling in Boulder County, recreational and in general, with the historic roads in the geologies and topographies of the Rocky Mountains. So I think we have the steepest rise between the Canadian and Mexican border. Putting roads in these places is hard, and it's really expensive. And what Boulder County already knows is there's insufficient shoulders on that road. And this has been identified, and in the Transportation Master Plan, would be uphill or what are called climbing shoulders for cyclists. And this moves the cyclist over onto a bikeable shoulder. It's different from a bike lane. It's a bikeable shoulder based on the speed and volume of auto traffic on that facility. It's also cost effective, right? The government's not made of money. If you say, well, I'd like a separated bike path on Lee Hill, it's hard to even imagine this with an escarpment on one side and a drop-off on the other. What caught us all off guard here a little is that this cyclist was descending and an auto turned left into him. That's about the only authoritative detail that I really know based on the Colorado State Patrol's initial comment, and that collision resulted in the fatality.
Now, within Boulder city limits, the infrastructure for biking is pretty impressive, at least to my relative newcomer eyes. How big is the drop-off once you get outside of city limits into the county?
So again, we're really lucky to live in Boulder, the city of Boulder and Boulder County, because those two entities cooperate. I'll give you an example. Years in making is a 119 bikeway between Longmont and Boulder. And instead of just throwing this infrastructure in as an afterthought, which happens all too often and is really frustrating, the county and the city, both Longmont and City of Boulder, are working hard at bringing that major bicycling multi-use path facility right into the city so you can connect. This is the holy grail of bicycling policy and engineering is connectivity, network connectivity. I've got a really big phrase when you're ready.
Not too long ago, there was a city ranking of bikes, bike-friendly cities, and Boulder didn't do as well as some may have imagined as far as U.S. cities go. And one of the points to its disadvantage was the perception of bike safety within Boulder. And in the time that I've been here, I moved here in April, there have been two bike fatalities in this time. what can the city and county do to make people feel safer on bikes and be safer on their bikes?
Resource allocation to their master plans. The city, I think, has a different name for it, but the county's transportation master plan has a major goal, a stated major goal of multimodal connectivity. This refers to bike ped infrastructure that takes you away from autos to wherever you need to go. Our group is, we'd add on a little bit to that, we'd add on recreation. So for us, we're talking about quality of life and the ability to have things like the joy of bicycling without being within lethal proximity to autos. So this is really a conundrum. We're talking about budgetary and other resource allocation to coordinated multimodal network connectivity as indicated in the city and the county's overarching plans. So Leehill has a bikeable shoulder in the TMP, but when it would be funded is a complete other thing. These processes take years. There it is. They know they need it. It's in the plan. But getting funding there, it could be years. It could be decades.
Matt Muir, anything else that you'd like to add that I didn't touch on with my questions?
You're not going to solve fatalities like that that occurred on Leehill by looking at it as an isolated incident. The way you're going to solve that is by enacting all the levels that are identified in the master plans at a place like Boulder County. And that's resource allocation. And so the question is really, how do we want to live? And I think C4C is saying that we'd like to live with humane ethics where you can access activity in nature.
Matt Muir of Cyclists for Community, thank you so much for coming into the station to discuss this today.
Thanks for having us.
And that's all the time we have for today's Friday Morning Magazine on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thanks for joining us. I've been your host, Shannon Young.